We have more women incarcerated than the rest of the world does totally. And we need to fix that. We need to fix people. We need to give people second chances so they don't recidivate. We need to try and prevent incarceration.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and I am really excited today about our guest and sharing her story with you. Her name is Renee Van Roeckel. She never imagined the word felon would be part of her identity, but after serving 36 months in federal prison for a crime that harmed both people she knew and those that she didn't, she refuses to let that label define her and only deepen her empathy. A mother, a grandmother, wife, and dog lover, Renee's path to incarceration was not just shaped by her decisions, but by decades of unresolved trauma. In prison, she finally confronted the pain that she had long buried, and that reckoning became the foundation for her healing. Today, Renee is the founder of Connecting to Cope, a platform built to empower individuals with the tools, stories, and support they need to heal and grow regardless of their past. Through self-care, education, and community, she's helping others rewrite their stories just as she continues to rewrite her own. Renee, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Richard, and I am so happy to be here and share my story, and hopefully that story encourages some others to go out and get some help that they need.
And these are stories in particular that are exciting to me, that I know inspire so many people, because you had forks in a road, and I don't know the details yet. We're about to find them out, the audience and I together, but you said it, or I said it rather, in your intro, the word felon becoming part of your identity, a 36-month term in a federal prison. So let's talk about it, Renee. Let's talk about the crime, how it happened, and I want to know everything. So let's begin there.
Well, we'll start with the trauma, which is really what I believe was a huge part of the crime that I committed. Why I committed the crime, people pleasing, and thinking that by helping others and by giving them what they want, I was doing them a favor and doing myself a favor, and that really was not the truth. However, let's go back a little bit. I grew up in the Midwest. I am a proud Minnesotan, even though I live in Iowa now. I grew up in Minnesota, the southwest corner, in a tiny town of about 600 people. Everybody knew everyone. And I don't know if any of your listeners out there live in a community like that, but most of the time when you were a child, your parents knew what you did before you entered the door. It's just the way we were. So it was safe. It was a safe haven. I felt safe growing up. I was the youngest daughter of four daughters and about between 13 and 14 years younger than my closest sibling. So a lot like an only child. We could say I'm a bit spoiled. Anyway, my sisters have always told me that I was that. And I will agree. My parents were good parents. And even though they were a little bit older than my friends' parents, they were there for me. And I was very lucky in that aspect. However, the safety that I felt in that community is what led to some of my trauma. I was sexually abused by three gentlemen in my community. Well, I shouldn't say gentlemen, three boys, boys I went to high school with, boys I knew my whole life, boys I went to school with every day, saw almost every day, and a innocent trip to see something is how I was coerced at our local track and field led into a sexual abuse situation. I don't like to go into the graphic details on any of my podcasts or when I'm speaking to someone else, but it did shape who I was and destroy the safe haven in my head that I had. I went home to my mother, and something else that shaped me is that when I got home, my mother was, of course, empathetic and devastated. And after I told her what happened, she cleaned me up. I did not seek medical attention that day, but what she told me lasted forever and still shapes who I am. And that was, we are going to keep this to ourselves. So this was in the 70s. I'm in my 50s. This was in the 70s. And her belief was by bringing forth what happened to me, it would make me look bad, not the people who were my perpetrators. And that is what I lived with. And after that day, until I was in my early 40s, I didn't speak of it again unless one of the perpetrators brought it up to me. So that is what I lived with. And the word bad has resonated throughout me. And I was just trying to make people see that I was quote unquote good.
We did a bit of a time jump there because you went from when this happened in the 70s to, you know, you really didn't talk about it till your 40s, but a lot of things happened in between, obviously. And I'm curious. So with that as backstory, what led to the crime that you were incarcerated for?
Well, a lot of things. I'm a mom and I have two boys, and my boys were young. And we were looking for a supplemental source of income, which a lot of us do, right? We have our day corporate jobs where we go and it's mundane and we go back and forth, or many of us do. My husband was successful. He was a printer and had been for years. But again, I was looking for that little source of income. And my business started out as a legitimate business. I was selling secondary tickets on the secondary market. I had a few ins and it was going well. And of course, once you start getting a little bit of success, you want more success. And then the people pleasing from my trauma started into the whole scenario of my small ticket business. And I got a few opportunities that were not legitimate. And to make a long story short, I took those opportunities. Now, at first, I told myself they were not illegal and that I was doing the right thing, and that I would get myself out of this before it got too far down the road. I involved people that I loved. I involved people that I didn't know, but I know I hurt so many people. And that is one of the biggest regrets that I have in my crime, and something that is the hardest to get over. Healing from my trauma, healing from what happened to me. There were a few other things that happened too that had to do with sexual trauma in my teen years. But that assault is really, you know, what set up my life to have PTSD and to be a people pleaser, which led into, once I started getting people tickets, of course I wanted to get them tickets. And even if I couldn't get them tickets, I would say I could. And I got involved with a group from down south who was selling tickets that were non-existent. And I saw the light. I saw what was going on. But I always thought that I could make it right. And obviously, on the day that I decided that I could still keep scamming people and taking hopes and dreams away from people on events they wanted to go to, or I had to stop, there was that day. And that day I woke up and it was either literally use the gun in my husband's closet, because that's how bad I felt, or keep going, turn myself in and pay the piper. And I wanted my kids to know the true story, that everything that I did was not bad, that everything revolving around my life was not bad. And that is the path I chose. I turned myself in. And the first person I turned myself into, I couldn't turn myself into him. I was on a committee with him and I took my computer and I said, this is what I'm doing. And it's illegal. And I know it's illegal. And I've tried to get myself out of it and I can't. So I need to make it right in some way, or try to make it right. And he said, Renee, take your computer, take your stuff, get yourself a lawyer and go forward. And that is what I did.
You mentioned that suicide was something you were contemplating.
Definitely.
How close were you to doing that, and why, what ultimately stopped you?
I would say I was closer to suicide than not suicide. I remember that day somewhat. It's kind of a blur, but I remember sitting in my bathroom in front of my vanity and knowing that I couldn't look at myself in the mirror anymore and be the person that I had become and living two different lives. Part of my PTSD and part of the things that my mind played on me was a lot of disassociation. I used disassociation as a non-healthy coping skill, and it came into the fact where I would forget whole days and meet people who knew me and I did not know them. So that was part of my life at that point too. So it wasn't just the ticket situation. It was a whole influx of items that not taking care of trauma, not taking care of PTSD, and ultimately providing no self-care for myself led to the decision I had to make that day. And again, sat in front of my vanity in the basement, looked at the gun in the closet. I think if I would have actually got up and got the gun, that's how close I was, I think I would have used it. But I had enough willpower and enough love for my children and my family that I wanted them to know my side of the story. And if I would have chose to take that act that day, they would have never known it. They just would have known someone else's. And that, I believe, sir, is why I chose to turn myself in and start. And that really was the start of my healing that day. I didn't see it that day, but now looking back, that was the start of the journey to find myself, know who I was, and try to make my wrongs right.
And so you get yourself an attorney, you gave your computer to who you needed to give it to. The sentence was a 3-year sentence in a federal prison.
Oh, Dr. Richard, it was much longer than that.
Okay.
I turned in my computer, I got myself an attorney. We decided amongst ourselves and amongst the law enforcement, the FBI, the Postal Service, because what I got eventually charged with, they couldn't find anything to charge me with federally. But because it was across state lines and I didn't quite fit, like, you know, racketeering, I wasn't that kind of a criminal, it wasn't in there. They finally went through everything I gave them and found one charge of mail fraud that they could charge me with. They knew I did something wrong. They knew I was breaking the law. If it would have been a state case, it would have been theft. And there's a different word with that theft, but I can't remember exactly what it is. But in the federal system, I was charged with one count of mail fraud. And that took about 4 years to find that. So I was in limbo, didn't know what I was going to be charged with, if I was going to be charged. At some point, even the people who were prosecuting me were saying, I don't even know if we can charge you. I never went through an indictment. I never got arrested. I was never in a cell. All these things are just crazy. But yet I turned myself in after coming up with a plea deal. I signed off the plea deal, pled guilty, because I knew what I was doing was wrong, and turned myself into federal prison in June of 2017.
And what was your release date?
My release date was May 1st of 2020.
Okay.
Right during the COVID, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Coming out into a world that I had never known before, and no one had really, so.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. I've talked to people over the years who have been incarcerated or worked with prisoners. It's transformative in a lot of ways for some people, in very negative ways. It sounds like for you, it was transformative in positive ways. What were the things that impacted you the most, the shifts in you that you made during your time while you were in that federal prison?
So much. It was the first time in my life that I had ever truly taken time for just me. And it was so sad, but yet enlightening at the same time that it took getting me to federal prison and facing my trauma. So facing, you know, my bad, and then facing the bad that I had done to others. And that at the end of the day, it was my responsibility that everything you do in your life is a choice. And I talk about choices a lot on my own podcast. And everything I did was my choice. And that it was my responsibility to make right with the people that I hurt, but it was also my responsibility to make right with myself, to come to terms with the trauma that happened to me and the things that I was facing. And if I did that, I knew that I could be the person that I wanted to be, or at least work on becoming the person that I wanted to be. And that's a work in progress. You know, you got to do the work. And I do the work every day. And I still go back to pre-prison time at some points in my life. I think we all do. But you just keep going on. You just keep doing the work. And that's what we do. But prison for me, back to your question, prison for me, I had a great therapist. She was with the BAU before she came to the Federal Bureau of Prisons. So she knew not only the mental challenges I had because of not facing my trauma and because of the age of my sexual assault, it affected me in many ways that I didn't even know existed. The disassociation, the dissociative amnesia, the forgetting of things, the being at family events, because one of my perpetrators actually joined my family in a way. He married a family member. That's a whole nother story. And so I would be at family events and I would not even be there mentally. My body would be there, but I would feel like I was watching the whole thing from above because I just didn't want to face it. And there was a lot of bad, negative things that happened in the relationship that the perpetrator had with my family member. So it was tough. It was tough. And I needed to heal and I needed to talk about those things. I needed to be angry, angry at myself, angry at other people to get over and get to where I am today.
You said a couple things that are interesting. Angry at yourself, which I want to go into in a moment. But you also said basically apologizing, you know, making it right to the people you hurt. You said you were in a pretty small town where, you know, everybody knows everybody. And my presumption that this was probably as big a scandal as that town has ever had. And I imagine that a lot of the people that you sold these tickets to were people who were neighbors and, you know, friends and such. So did you actually reach out and talk to these people and say, I'm sorry, I sold you scam tickets?
Well, fortunately, Dr. Richard, the tickets that I sold to them were legitimate.
Okay.
So my crime, though some were to people I knew, but did not know very well. And not that that makes it right, because I still owe these people an apology and they were still in my circle, or the people I sold to were in those people's circles. And some were people I never met. So where this scandal touched is, we'll go to my family life. My boys were athletes. My youngest son was an all-state athlete for 3 years in three sports. So he was well known in the area. He was then playing college D1 football when I went to prison. He was an All-American. He was known. He was in the media a lot too. I'm very thankful to our local media and to the media that covered his college games. They never brought me into the picture. I think they saw me, yet I was lucky enough to be able to support him for 3 of his 4 years of college football, because I did not have to report and it took so long to get my case solved. And so I was still a figure at the ball games. I was still a mom. And by that time, my boys had come to some terms with it. That's a whole nother story. But our relationship was okay. When I got home, our relationship has gotten stronger since I've come from prison. They're adults And so that makes them a lot easier to talk to because you can tell them the true story. But as for the scandal in our small community, it wasn't the community I grew up in.
I see. Okay.
So that is what I dealt with. And I still kept supporting my kids. And my lawyer told me once, you know, you can't change your past. This was the big deal. You can't change your past and you need to be there for your family yet. And you just need to put your head down, go to the games and move forward. And that is what I did.
One of the things that you mentioned, and I'm curious about it because you mentioned how angry you were at yourself. Forgiveness of self is sometimes, it's sometimes easier to forgive others than it is ourselves. How did you forgive yourself for what happened?
Oh, Dr. Richard, I am not there 100% yet. It is a work in progress. And as I say, I still do the work every day. Every day, my trauma healing, my mental health, my self-care. And can I honestly sit here with you today on this podcast and tell you that I have forgiven myself? I cannot. Is it a work in progress? Do I work on it every single day? Do I have a little bit more compassion for the young girl who didn't fix her trauma, who didn't take care of things like she should have? I do. I do. But I work on forgiving myself every day. And that will be, I think, a lifelong journey.
And, you know, flashing forward to the present, you founded a platform called Connecting to Cope. Talk to us about that.
Well, when I was going through everything I was going through, and when I realized how broken I was, and I realized how broken I was in prison, you know, what got me there first and foremost, talking about the things that had happened in my life, so many of them, PTSD that led to actions that caused more PTSD, that caused more PTSD, that caused disassociation, that, you know, caused depression. And everything just escalates and snowballs. You know, it's like that little tiny snowball at the top of the mountain. And the more it rolls down, the bigger it gets and the more levels there is to it. And the reason I started Connecting to Cope is if I can help one person to stop that snowball quicker than when I stopped it, then I feel that I am doing something for others. As well as myself. It's a healing process for myself too, because the people I talk to, their stories help me. And hopefully my story and the knowledge that I've gained help them. And that is the whole goal of Connecting to Cope. Coaching, helping people, speaking about advocacy for justice reform, because I was blind to our prison systems before I went in. I think most of us are, especially in the Midwest. We live in our own little bubble. Yeah, you know, someone that probably went to jail or prison or, you know, they did this or that or the other thing. But it's pretty much something that isn't spoken about, you know, at coffee on Saturday morning at our local cafe, right? And I didn't realize how broken our justice system was. And while I was in, I didn't realize until I was there. I worked in the education department. And how many people do not even have a GED, let alone a high school education, let alone any college, any education, the wherewithal to go out and find jobs, the wherewithal to read? And that is something that needs to be fixed within our systems, as well as stopping people who are in the demographic that typically become incarcerated because they are living in an area or living in a family or are of a race that is basically bookmarked to become a criminal or involved with a criminal. And again, didn't realize how bad that was in our country, and it needs to be fixed. You know, starting at young ages, people who do have learning disabilities, people who are in a demographic where they don't go to school and they are truant and they get thrown into special education programs. And really, they don't need that. They just need to be forced to go to school. Parents need to be educated. Kids need to be educated. And I know that's a long haul. Trust me, I've done the research on it and I've tried to talk about it and I still do. Because again, if one person gets the message, it's one less person that is going to become a factor of our judicial, of our penile system in our country. And so that is what I advocate for. And also, once you're in prison, there is hardly anything that is going to help you secure a job once you're incarcerated. We have the highest recidivism rate in the world. In fact, our recidivism rate is higher than all countries put together as a whole. And we have more women incarcerated than the rest of the world does totally. And we need to fix that. We need to fix people. We need to give people second chances so they don't recidivate. We need to try and prevent incarceration. And that's where I'm at. That's my soapbox. I can go on and on about that one.
How do you do it? How does the platform do that?
Our platform, you know, where do we go, right? Because it's such a big problem. And I was just talking about what happened in our country yesterday, and I don't want to get into that. I'm not going to get into a political battle because I think I'm right middle of the road. I've done some lobbying for special education platforms to try to fix that so that it lowers our incarceration rate. I've done some lobbying to improve our programs after people get out of prison, as well as provide education while people are in prison to know as simply how to fill out job applications and do job interviews. And there are so many ways that we can do that. At Connecting to Cope, I think our first avenue is connection, to talk to people, to make people aware of what's going on, not only with people who suffer from trauma so they don't get to where I am, but for people who are already affected by the world of incarceration and poverty. And that's where a lot of our incarcerated individuals come from. And also race. You know, the population of Black individuals compared to white individuals in prison. I don't know the percentages, so I'm not even going to shout it out to you, but white people are outnumbered. And I don't think that that's because we are better. I think it's because maybe we have more education as to not go down that road. Maybe we don't have as many family members that go down that road. I can't tell you what that is. I need to do more research on that. So,
outstanding. Well, it sounds like you're doing much needed work in the world, and you yourself had an experience that completely shaped your life. And now you're able to put that into good use by helping others. And that is inspiring. Renee, as you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests a single question. And that is, what is your biggest helping? That one most important takeaway you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
I think the biggest thing that I tell people when I'm speaking to them, and I guess I'm speaking to all your listeners today, right? Is that do the work. Find what is causing you pain in your world, whether that be trauma, sexual abuse, drug addictions, you know, spousal abuse. There's so many things in our world today. Seeing the video that was on TV yesterday, right? That can cause PTSD and trauma for so many people in our country. Do the work. Go out, find out what's wrong with you, get help, whether it's by calling somebody like me on my platform and having me help you find the people who can help you, or if I can help you, I'd be glad to help you. But we do both avenues. And again, do the work. Put the work in, make yourself healthier, find some good coping skills, and dedicate some time to self-care.
Renee, tell us where people can learn more about you online.
www.connectingtocope.com. I'm also on Facebook under Connecting to Cope and on Instagram on Connecting to Cope.
Perfect. And for those of you in the car, we got you covered everything Connecting to Cope. And Renee Van Roekel will be available in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Well, Renee, thank you for spending time with us today. What you're doing is important, and keep it up. Really appreciate the conversation.
And I thank you so much for having me today, Dr. Richard. And I hope one listener or more than one can get something out of what we talked about today.
Absolutely. And for each and every one of you at home who listen to this, thank you as well. If you liked it, if you're inspired, if you're going to go learn more about Connecting to Cope online, go give us a follow and a 5-star review, because this is what helps other people find this show. But most importantly, Go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag #MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.